Welcome to Public Policy This Week, a well-rounded weekly discussion of policy issues that frame today's American experience.
Good morning. It's Friday, and you've joined us for Public Policy This Week here on KYMN Radio.
Public Policy This Week is dedicated to the discussion of public policy issues. Each week, we take a look at a specific policy subject, and we have guests on the show that are experts in their fields.
We do our best to stay away from politics. Instead, we concentrate on research and the expertise of our guests to help us to arrive at well-thought-out, comprehensive, integrated policy solutions to the shared challenges we face in society.
Our program runs the gamut on policy subjects, from local municipal concerns to state and even national level issues. Everything is fair game. Our objective is civil, thoughtful dialogue about important public policy issues that convey ideas and solutions to move society forward. I'm Joe Moravcek.
And I'm Rich Larson. On today's program, we're going to talk about adult education and the Cannon Valley Elder Collegium based here in Northfield since it opened in 1997. Our guests are Dan Sullivan and Jack Seeloff. Dr. Daniel Sullivan served as the 17th Dr. Daniel Sullivan served as the 17th president of St. Olaf. Dr. Daniel Sullivan served as the 17th president of St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York, and he was a professor of sociology from 1996 until his retirement in 2009. At the time of his retirement, Dr. Sullivan was named president emeritus at St. Lawrence. Dr. Sullivan had previously served as president and professor of sociology at Allegheny College from 1986 to 1996, vice president for planning and development and associate professor of sociology at Carleton College from 1979 to 1986, and assistant and then associate professor of sociology at Carleton College from 1971 to 1979.
Dr. Sullivan is a 1965 graduate in mathematics at St. Lawrence University. He received a PhD in sociology in 1971 from Columbia University. In May of 2009, Dr. Sullivan received honorary doctorates from his alma mater and neighboring Clarkson University, and in May of 2010 from the State University of New York, Canton. The emphasis for Dr. Sullivan's research and scholarship have been science and mathematics education, public policy issues in higher education, including the affordability of college, and the sociology of science and medicine. He and his wife, Anne, returned to Northfield to live in June of 2013. He is now the curriculum director of the Cannon Valley Elder Collegium, our topic for today's program. Dr. Daniel Sullivan, welcome to the KYMN studios and Public Policy This Week.
Thank you, Joe.
Alongside Dr. Sullivan this morning is Jack Seeloff. Jack is a retired master carpenter, St. Olaf graduate, an ardent devotee to classical music. He has daughters that are professional musicians, and he is a frequent attendee at Minnesota and St. Paul orchestra events. We invited Jack in today as a student of multiple Cannon Valley Elder Collegium courses. We wanted to get a student's perspective in addition to the curriculum director's broad view. Jack Seeloff, welcome to Public Policy This Week.
Thanks, Joe.
So we're going to talk about adult education because that's really important. But really, Jack, I want to talk about your daughters for a second. You've got two daughters who are both professional classical musicians. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Where are they?
One lives in Brooklyn, New York. She plays the viola. She's a freelancer. Plays in various orchestras. The one that she plays in the most is called the Knights. The other one plays the clarinet, and she lives in London and plays in the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
Where did they get their start in music?
We lived in St. Paul. Suzuki violin, both of them took Suzuki violin when they were young. And that is a program that just encourages you all the time and gives you good experiences doing that. And also, you know, I'd recommend that for kids. I mean, they play together with a lot of other kids. It's a social activity also. And so they just kept doing that. And then my younger daughter decided to switch over to some other instrument so she wouldn't have to compete with her older sister, mm-hmm. I guess. And so she picked up the clarinet when she was in elementary school at Webster Magnet Elementary School in St. Paul. They had a great band director. And then my wife got her to start taking lessons with Tim Paradise, who was the principal clarinet in the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra at that time.
Yeah.
And so she was just set up, and she just kept playing and playing. So, yeah.
That's just fantastic. And now she's in London. And I don't know which one's actually more impressive, the fact that you've got a daughter playing with the London Philharmonic or another daughter who is making a living as a freelance violist.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just tough to make a living as a musician.
It is.
I would say.
It's tough. So, yeah.
Both right. of them, yeah. Rich, we're going to have to keep these guys on topic. They're tennis players.
I get it. I understand. But real quick, we're bragging about Jack's Jack's daughters. I want to brag about Dr. Sullivan's granddaughter for a second, too, if you don't mind. Full disclosure, folks, Dr. Sullivan's granddaughter, Kate Kelly, was my intern here at KYM in summer before last. And she... You know, to say she was my intern was ridiculous. She was another reporter here. She did a great job in the work she was doing covering a trailer park situation here in town. And she is now getting her master's degree at the University of Maryland in journalism, and had her pick of the litter of pretty much everywhere she wanted to go, Dr.
She
Sullivan.
Did. I mean, she was admitted everywhere.
Yeah.
Like the investigative journalist she is, she investigated each of the programs and deeply. She talked to students and faculty on the phone and asked them hard questions. And
that's fantastic. And I have to say, it had to be hard for you. I know she was accepted at Columbia University. That being your alma mater, it had to be hard for you to not try to nudge her one way.
No, I learned a long time ago. Kate does her homework, and she made the right decision for her, and all you can do is clap.
I learned that in about 5 minutes when she was working here. I adore your granddaughter, and thank you for sending her our way.
Dan, we got a rare 50-degree day, 50-degree December day in Northfield.
Yeah.
Is your tennis racket still out of the case?
It's always ready, but it isn't going to be outdoors.
No.
Jack actually played last night down in Owatonna.
Is that right?
I've been resting a little bit before starting up again. I'll start up again when we go to Florida for a while.
Awesome. That's great. Jack, I'm going to ask you to turn that microphone just a touch. There you go, so we can pick you up a little bit better. Okay. Education is one of my favorite things to talk about, so let's get to it. Dan, just, if you wouldn't mind, give us an overview of the Cannon Valley Elder Collegium, how it got started, what's the mission, and then how did you get involved with the Elder Collegium?
Well, Cannon Valley Elder Collegium was started 26 years ago by some retired Carleton and St. Olaf faculty members who, as they were thinking about the future for themselves and the things that they and people they knew would like to do, they decided that to start what is essentially a liberal arts college for elders in Northfield, focused on the kinds of big questions that people our age struggle with and hope we can solve as a country or at least improve. Questions that involve searching the evidence and trying to get to a better place in your own thinking about them. So they began doing it. It functions three terms a year, like the Carleton schedules, a fall, winter, and spring term. The classes run 8 weeks, so 2 hours, 2 hours a class. Most of them are in person, in Northfield.
Mm-hmm.
They were always in person in Northfield until COVID.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, all the courses had to be taught online.
Right.
So a residue of that is that we do teach every term still some courses on Zoom because we discovered that Northfielders don't always stay in Northfield.
That's true.
especially in the winter.
We scatter when the snow flies, yeah.
And some of our best teachers don't always stay in Northfield, or right. at least are not here the whole year. And so teaching via Zoom from a distance is a way to keep them, mm-hmm. them at, attached. We serve a couple hundred students over the course of a year. In any term, that's about the number mm-hmm. the number of students who enroll. And costs $50. It's been $50 per course for 26 years. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
The idea that there's been such a decline in the real cost of a CVEC course over time, if we would only get the government to include it in the inflation calculation, I mean, inflation would be near zero around. So that's basically it. But I guess the important thing to keep emphasizing, so I'm glad you described this as a conversation about lifelong learning because that's what CVEC is really about. And we listen carefully to the kinds of things we hear from our friends and colleagues or students when we're teaching about topics they'd like to have us try to address. And as the curriculum director, I'm the one who sort of finds the teachers and supports the teachers and helps them be able to produce the quality that we're looking for in these courses.
How was the Collegium lucky enough to land you as the curriculum director?
Well, when we moved back to Northfield, all of our friends said, you know, first of all, they said, you got to start taking courses in CVEC because it's really, and then they said, you know, you ought to teach a course in CVEC. So I did. I taught a course on higher education first time six years ago. I'm teaching it again with an updated course with another retired college president this winter term via Zoom. So I got involved that way, and then I'm kind of a sucker for this mm-hmm. sort of thing. When Perry Mason, who is an old friend and colleague, had to step down as a curriculum director, so they approached me, and I thought about it for a little bit and said, this is what I've always loved to do, try to find great people, great teachers, and support them. I'll never forget what my dad told me when I went to St. Lawrence. He said, find out who the best teachers are, and whatever they teach, take it.
That's
been my philosophy, and that's the way I try to approach this. Find really good people that I and others, and lots of people in the community would like to learn from, and then try to support them in delivering a stimulating and challenging educational experience.
So, I guess it's kind of a two-part question. What are some of the classes? I went on the website and looked, and there's some stuff that I think is really interesting. But what are some of the classes that are offered? And really, I'd be interested to hear about how you go about developing those classes, and where do you go find your instructors?
Well, a lot of that is word of mouth and knowing people. There's a network of informants, if mm-hmm. you will, there's a spy network in the area that whispers, and people whisper to me from time to time. You know, you ought to try to get so and so involved
guy, yeah.
in this, and that's how. How this guy got involved, Joe Moravchik got involved. We were sitting here last spring talking about higher education, and we finished, and Joe said, you know, maybe I'd like to teach a course in CVEC. And so right after that, I always buy the coffee, mm-hmm. and that led to a coffee, and that's kind of how it works. And I spend a fair amount of time selling because the pay is just so phenomenal.
Yeah. At $50 a course, you guys must be rolling in dough.
We are rolling. Yeah. Well, that's the paradox of it. The Cannon Valley Elder Collegium, I believe, is the most financially solvent 501c3 in the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
And you know, think about it. We have no buildings,
yep.
Right? We do give instructors a modest honorarium. We don't have any office space. And we do have an endowment that's now almost $200,000 that spins off some revenue. So that's why the tuition has been able to stay the same for 26 years.
That's pretty great.
Dan, what does a typical student look like? Who takes the courses at CVC? And then additionally, what is the typical student looking for in a CVC course?
Well, the baseline in our bylaws is that it's intended for students who are at least 50 years old. But if there's space available in a course, people who are younger than 50 can take a course. I believe, I haven't confirmed it, I was going to try to confirm it for today's discussion, that we have a 12 or 13-year-old student taking David Nitz's course on astronomy. With her mother, in the winter term, and we had special conversations about all of that. So it is open, but we try to reserve spots for people who are 50 and over. And what are they looking for in the course? You're going to ask Jack that in a minute, I know, but they're at a time in life where they have time. But they're also wrestling with big questions in their own lives and the world around them, they'd like to gain greater understanding of those issues and use that understanding to make their remaining years more meaningful.
Yeah.
And again, I hope you talk about your course a little later as well, because that's exactly what your course is about.
If he doesn't start talking about his course, I'm going to ask him about it. So, Jack, what was it about the Collegium that attracted you, and how has it been as a retired master carpenter to find yourself back in a classroom?
Well, I guess I'm what Dan would describe as a lifelong learner. I'm just interested in a lot of things. I'm interested in history, literature, mm-hmm. music, politics. These are all things it's fun. The classes are fun. There are no tests or exams, and it feels like when you get into the class, you feel intimidated at first sometimes. At least I have, because we usually go around the room and, you know, talk about why we were taking the class, who we are, and things like that, and gosh, there are a lot of really smart people in these classes, mm-hmm. but then there are lots of other types of people, too. Farmers' wives, mm-hmm. small business people. There's a number of PhDs, you know. These are the kind of people that it's great to, you know, talk to in these classes, because I wasn't an English major, you know, and I took classes. One of the classes was Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky, you know. Book that I love, but I haven't really studied it in depth. So, that was one example of a good class.
I'm a little bit fascinated by this, and maybe the culture there. Is there a camaraderie among the students the way you'd get in pretty much every other school?
I don't know if that's true. There are some people that take a lot of the classes who I've met, but really it's a large group of people.
Yeah.
So I haven't really noticed that as a particular student body.
Sure.
You know.
All right. So what other classes have you taken besides your
another one? Taught by the same Russian professor from Carleton that taught the Dostoevsky one, Soviet Russian literature. That was interesting. Took a class on Welsh culture and history. That was good. Let's see. I took a great class on DNA, and I'm not, really conversant with much, scientific knowledge, but I that was really great.
Is that getting into like the biology of it, or?
Well, we had a thick book to read about this, and it was taught by a retired physician from Mayo Clinic and also a lawyer. So we talked about all the legal implications of DNA and the legal world, as well as the science of it.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so that was really fascinating, and that was one of these classes where I just thought I'm probably going to be lost, but the instructors were really good and explained a lot of this stuff, coherently. So, yeah, we had a very good discussion in that class. Let's see. Oh, it took another great class on the economic theories of Thomas Piketty, his French economist.
Yeah.
About equality, and Dan was involved in teaching that class also, along with an economics professor from Carleton. That was good. And I took a jazz listening class taught by a professor from St. Olaf.
My pal Dave Hagedorn.
Yes, Dave Hagedorn taught that class.
And I want to take that class.
It's coming up. You can take that again.
I don't have the time right now, but I'm going to take that class.
That's a great class, really. And I have a son-in-law who's a jazz pianist, and so that really increased my knowledge of jazz listening and history and whatnot. So that was a great class. I've taken a few other ones. I'm looking forward to taking one on opera coming up.
Very nice.
Yes. So, yeah.
Adding to Jack's point about the people that take these courses.
Yeah.
So I taught my first course. It was the history and current state of U.S. policing. I had a professor in there, a teacher, a lawyer, another police officer, multiple small business owners. Mm-hmm. And they were, many of them were world travelers, Peace Corps, and had been to dozens of countries, and they just have all these wonderful experiences and perspectives. It makes for a wonderful discussion.
I have to believe that those classroom discussions are amazing. Yeah.
Well, it's also an illustration of another point, is that not all the instructors are retired professors. Just looking at the winter term coming up, we're teaching 15 courses, and 6 of them are being taught by people who were not faculty at a college. We have a course on Braiding Sweetgrass, the book that's so popular, and it's now full. We have a course on Northfield history around the Civil War and the impact of the Civil War on the area and the development of Northfield, and she's not a Paul Kluge is teaching again his course on Vietnam history, and Paul is what we look for are people who have things to say, things to share, and who hopefully have the pedagogical inclinations to engage lifelong learners in studying a big question, and some of what we do, I think, is bold. I think the course Joe Shaw taught on policing in the United States, which he's going to teach again in the spring, it required paid attention to what the law is, what the evidence is, what's going on, open and honest and encouraging dialogue, and the idea that in the state of Minnesota, with George Floyd, you could have a course like this, and the reviews of the course were just terrific. And
I expect nothing
that's
less.
What we try to do. Some courses are involve difficult questions, not just big questions, and they require teachers who can make the whole thing work.
you know, I mean, you just said it, and we've talked about it on this show. Policing is a hot button topic in this country right now. Joe, how do you approach putting a course like that together?
That's a big question right there. I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of time with Dan early on because we're talking about a broad topic. And we've got 8 weeks to cover, to put together a course, 2 hours a period. So I needed some direction on how to limit the scope of it. And Dan was great about that. A couple of things. Good police officers and good police departments are important aspects of society. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get that mm-hmm. across. But there are big questions out there. You know, after the in-custody death of George Floyd, how could we not talk about how that has affected police work?
Sure.
And what was interesting about our class was, imagine, everybody had a different perspective, a different viewpoint, but we were able to have civil dialogue about these big questions in police work.
Yeah.
I completely appreciated how we were able to have those civil dialogue as a group and answer some of the big questions. So it was great. I'm very happy to be invited back to do it in the spring. I had a great experience with the group I had this fall. Can we talk a little bit more about lifelong learning?
Yes.
I'll ask both of you a question about it. Dan, a focus of the program offerings at CVEC is lifelong learning. This idea of engaging in the pursuit of new interests, knowledge, and skills, perhaps uncovering new talents, certainly personal development. But there has to be other benefits as well to taking courses when you're over 50. A lot of the students in my class were in their 70s, such as the interaction with other learners to expand social connections, and even keeping the brain active for proper cognitive function and memory. Can you speak more about the importance of lifelong learning?
Well, a Carleton alumnus who I spent many years trying to help him give more of his money to Carleton used to say to me, "Sully," he'd say, "you're never educated until you're dead." Mm-hmm. And that's true. And I suppose it's certainly possible to be alive and not mentally competent. We know that's possible, but what we hear over and over, and what I certainly feel and have experienced in my own life, is that working the brain, thinking about things, trying to gain new knowledge and understanding, but try to look at all the evidence around certain things. It just this makes life more fulfilling. It makes you a better conversation partner in all of your social groups. And I think in Jack talked about, well, do the students connect together in other places? Yes, they do. I mean, a perfect example is our tennis group. Probably has at any given time five or six of us who are either taking or teaching courses in the CVEC. Mm-hmm. And when you change sides in the court, you know, you got to stop and drink a sip of water, and pretty soon, you know, you're talking about there were three of us in the tennis group taking a course on the paradoxes of Thomas Jefferson last fall. Which was just fascinating, and the course itself was, the instructor was a old friend of mine who's a retired professor at Notre Dame.
When are you going to offer that class again? Because I'm signing up right now.
Well, it was full when we offered it, and I've been doing everything I can to bribe him into doing it again.
All right,
it will happen, but I don't have him. I don't have a signed commitment yet at this point, but things like that, and the students in the class, you bump into people. This is a small town, mm-hmm. and you bump into people, and I now have people I can talk to that I've had both as students in classes and also taken classes with. So I do think it it broadens the you end up if you're an academic, you're ending up in classes, both teaching and taking classes with the kinds of people Joe was just talking about, mm-hmm. the diverse cross section of the people in this area, and you learn that they have things to say that you hadn't thought about before and hadn't known before. So it's an example of the way diverse perspectives make education better. Getting voices that you don't ordinarily encounter into the conversation can make it all better.
I was going to say, same question to you, Jack, about the importance of lifelong learning and some of the benefits you have personally experienced from being part of the many courses that you've taken at CVEC.
Mm. Yeah, I guess I always think of a particular, professor that I had at St. Olaf when we're studying, I think, political philosophy, and he explained to us that what we're in a dialogue with these writers, and the dialogue continues, Plato, Aristotle, whatnot, and it could apply to any of these other subjects that we study at CVC. CBEC. It's been great to talk about these things with people in the class. A lot of ideas that I hadn't thought of come up from people in the class as well as from the instructors. And as Dan was talking about, the social interactions also been very important to me. Yeah.
Good. Jack, how many are you taking a class every term?
I didn't take any during the pandemic. I didn't take any of the Zoom classes.
Sure.
I just just didn't feel
a lot of people
feel like
blame
it,
you for
it was
that.
Just not the same. Otherwise I try to take one or two. Yeah. It's hard to choose.
I can imagine.
Dozen offerings,
The class schedule does allow for you to take more than one class in a term?
Yes.
Okay.
The classes are spread equally throughout. They're in the morning and the afternoon, all 5 days of the week, and we spread them around so that... Okay. And we have some students who will take three every... Wow. I took two last fall. And, Each class has its own expectations for student preparation for class. Sometimes there's a fair amount of reading. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's a film to watch in between class sessions. But as Jack said, there's no grading. There are no exams. So you don't have to say anything if you don't want to. But if you do, you can.
This is my kind of school, then. I don't have to worry about my GPA. I like that. Do they typically meet once a week?
Once a week for 2 hours.
Okay.
And it's either 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning or 1:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon.
Okay. Oh, gosh. Sounds great. Folks, you're listening to Public Policy This Week on KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. I'm Rich Larson. My co-host is Joe Moravchik. We're talking today with Dan Sullivan and Jack Seeloff about the Cannon Valley Elder Collegium, which offers high-quality educational programs for students 50 and over.
All right, Dan, so we know there are three terms, the fall, winter, and spring terms. We know there are multiple course offerings each term. Is there, so you got the winter term coming up. Is there still availability? Can people still sign up for a winter course?
Yes, there are 15 courses being offered in the winter term. Okay. The registration is open until the 11th of December, and then it stays open until classes start afterward. If there are people who want to register late or if people drop out of a class, each class has a limit. Typically, in-person classes have a limit of 20 students per class, and Zoom classes have a limit of 15.
Yeah.
If you register before the end of the deadline, it's not a first-come, first-serve. obviously everybody gets in if the course is open, but when a course exceeds its limit, then there's a everybody goes into a random selection process to to become a member. We have one course that and I'll just say this because he's one of the great teachers I've ever encountered. Ed Langrack is teaching a course again. The title is "Aging is Hard. Can Philosophy Help?" And then he jokes, you know, the course could have been "Philosophy is Hard. Does aging help? And that course was oversubscribed the first day.
Wow!
Unfortunately, so there are a lot of, but he promises he'll teach it again. So that's you know that's how it works. Everything is available for view on the CVEC website, which is cvec.org. You can see both short descriptions and long descriptions of the courses. You can register online, or you could register by mail. And courses that will remain open until the week or two after the beginning of the course, if people can register. So. And, you know, like the one thing that elder students share with current students is they often leave things till the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, I'm as I said, I'm teaching a course again this winter on higher education, but there's a range of courses, this fascinating course on... taught by Rich Knorr, who is one of the great physics teachers anywhere, on the physics of light. And Rich's course is always is just about oversubscribed already. I mean, I had a favorite math professor on the faculty when I was president of St. Lawrence, and mm-hmm. she would say, "I can teach calculus to anybody."
I would challenge that.
She said, "My job is to cause students to learn calculus, and I can do that." And that's what Rich can do with a very difficult question. He taught a course in quantum entanglement, which is a really weird idea.
That's from deep theoretical stuff there. Yeah.
And class fills. The students love it. Mary Savina's course, and Jack is talking about an opera. It's called "What's Up, Doc?" It's a takeoff on "What's Up, Doc?"
Yeah.
Now, Mary is she's a geologist, an archaeologist,
mm-hmm.
but for her entire life, she's been an opera aficionado, and she's a singer also. She has very interesting ways of approaching things like so. Her course is, you know, going great guns, and so that's the fun about it. Even the people who teach who are former professors often teach in an area that wasn't there, but it's something that, you know, like Jack is a music aficionado, and there are people who develop deep skills and knowledge in areas that they didn't actually. So that's typical. Tim Madigan is teaching again on the 1970s, and Tim is not a former faculty member. He's a former mayor. And it's just fun to watch all of this work.
I've been looking on the CEVC website just to look at the course offerings, and the ones that really just caught my eye, the history of Northfield one, it looked really interesting, and the astronomy one, and then I saw my pal Dave Hagedorn's name on there, and I went, oh, I want to take his Dave Hagedorn. Just to give you a plug for your faculty, is acknowledged as one of the best vibraphone players in the world.
In the world. Exactly.
There are not 20 people better than him in the world at what he does. And he's a brilliant mind, and you've got him teaching at the CEVC. Like you said, one of the stated objectives is to provide a rich academic experience with challenging coursework. So, in order to take a CVEC course, does one have to have a formal education? Is there, you know, do I have to present my college transcript from St. Olaf? Or, and we talked a little bit about grades and such, but is there homework? Is there grades? Just, and you know, maybe
no grades. There is often reading or preparation to do, but the courses are aimed at a diverse audience, and so the Rich Knorr's course on light is not going to involve abstract mathematics, and students aren't going to be doing that sort of work. Paul Zorn, who's a retired St. Olaf math professor, taught a course for us on the concept of infinity, and he taught a course on calculus without the calculation. Mm-hmm. So, focusing on the really deep insights, the things that calculus allows you to do, and helping students understand what that is, not that they have to be able to do the calculation. So, it's sometimes we don't get it exactly right, but I think and Jack can attest to this. The students are very diverse, and what they have in common is they want to learn things, and they want to participate in conversations around big questions, and both learn things, but also have a chance to share their perspectives on from where they're coming from.
Jack, I want to ask you the same question. What is a typical class like for students? Is it lecture and note taking? Is it interactive? How does it work?
Not so much lecture, and some of the classes. The one that I just got done taking about a little book by an author named Timothy Snyder on tyranny. That was really mostly discussion, that mm-hmm. class, or very, very little introductory remarks from the instructor there. She guided the discussions really well, but still the class was sort of centered around what the people wanted to talk about in the class. But most of the other classes are, like, let's say the Dave Hagedorn's jazz class, we would listen to some selections. Dave would explain the significance of these pieces in the history of jazz, explain what the form was that they were playing in, whether it was 12-bar blues or mm-hmm. popular song form. And then we would talk about it a little bit, but there in that class there was so much music played that we didn't talk a lot. So it varies, I would say.
Were you a fan of jazz before you took the class? Did you come out of there a fan of jazz?
I was a fan of jazz, but I just didn't have an understanding of mm-hmm. that much of how it worked. A little bit, I had a little bit of understanding, but I understand. I really can increase my enjoyment of listening to jazz a lot. You know, when I'm listening to it now, I can really tell what's going on and what this a little bit what's going on. So yeah,
I would say that the typical pedagogy is what I would call a guided discussion mm-hmm. of the readings. So the instructor might lecture very briefly, might think it was important to clarify something that might be hard to grasp just from the reading, certainly our course on the paradoxes of Thomas Jefferson was entirely the reading was between 8 and 20 pages of Jefferson's letters and writings.
Sure.
And we read them 2 or 3 times mm-hmm. In preparation, but then the discussion was very close textual analysis to try to understand where Jefferson actually was on some of the issues that he's known to be complicated.
And those conversations could go on for hours.
But they're guided by the good instructors know how to engage students and get them to join those conversations. And that's the I would say the predominant pedagogy.
Right. Joe, is that what you're looking for when you teach a class? Do you want to throw an idea out there and see what comes back, or how does it work for you as an instructor?
Well, so a lot of times I'd start the courses with a PowerPoint, because what the PowerPoint allows me to do is to organize things for everybody in class, but also you can bring the characters of the class to life with images. You know, we did some history where we talked about how police departments were established in the mid-1800s in the East, but very different in the West, more of a vigilante justice scenario. And when we talked about things like the Texas Rangers and the James Gang and such, you could bring that to life with those images on the PowerPoint screen. And then from there, we always got into, there were always big questions for every class. They had podcasts to listen to outside of class, and they would bring those questions to class, and then we'd have these wonderful discussions, I guess, centered around the organization of the PowerPoints that we'd start with.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's great. So, Dan, many of your instructors, like my co-host here, Joe, have profound and remarkable backgrounds. I asked you a little bit about this before. I kind of want to dig down on this a little bit, though. How do you recruit your teachers, and how does the collegium decide what courses to teach?
Yeah.
With your distinguished background in education, sir, do you do anything?
Well, obviously, as a college president, you're concerned about the whole range of things, not just your own discipline. So, yeah. So certainly many years of experience hiring faculty and trying to find the ones who were going to engage our students is something I bring to the table. Mm-hmm. The title of that I have, which is curriculum director, is really a misnomer, because there really is no curriculum. You know, there's no Department of English that has a whole list of courses we start the other way. You start by finding instructors, and as I say, you know, a lot of it is word of mouth. We have a long list of people who have taught in CVEC before and who like to teach again from time to time, and so we keep track of each of the courses has a course evaluation, so we know the courses that students like the best, and the ones, you know, where they would have suggestions for improvement. So that's what it is, and I spend a lot of time trying to find new people. A lot of it is, as I say, word of mouth. Every year, some people retire from St. Olaf and Carleton.
Mm-hmm.
It takes them a year or two to calm down after. and
take a couple of deep breaths
and imagine that they would like to teach again, and then they begin to think about how they're not, you know, if they teach in CVEC, they get to do just the fun stuff, which is interact with people around something they care about, and they're not assessing them, they're not writing recommendations for them, they're not dealing with their family crises and all of the other things that instructors have. A typical experience is a year or two after they retire, they'll send a signal to one of my spies, who immediately contact me, and then we go to coffee, and I sell.
They put a potted plant on their balcony with a little red flag in there, and that's
we don't go that far. But a lot of it is selling. And knowing that that they are likely looking for things in their life that are meaningful, so that they can spend whatever time they have left doing something that they value and believing in, and actually making a difference with people. So that's what it is. So it's all. And then I rope them in, and I I sometimes edit their proposals and mm-hmm. and things of that sort. But it's an important part of it is expressing gratitude to making sure that they know how valuable and important what they do in CVEC is to the students who do this. Because again, they're not doing this for anything practical. They're not using it to get a better job. They're not looking for any credentials. They want a serious and engaging learning experience, and that's easy to sell.
Yeah,
actually, and
I would imagine it. I mean, it you don't have to. I used to be in sales, and they would tell me you have to contact somebody 12 times before they'll buy something from you. I would imagine it doesn't take you 12 conversations to recruit an instructor.
But the analogy in fundraising is it takes about 10 significant engagements yep. with a donor to get a significant gift. In CVEC, it's typically two to three, and sometimes less. So it's just a different. And again, they're certainly not doing it for the money. And several instructors each term say, "Thank you for this. I'm glad that you express your gratitude by sending this honorarium. But I think you need it more than I do, and so I'm sending it back."
I want to ask a little bit, just going off script here for a second. I have to imagine it works a lot of the time, but not maybe all of the time. Jack, have you ever found yourself at the end of a course where you had to write an evaluation that wasn't great? And Dan, how do you deal with that situation then?
I don't think I ever have had to do that.
Okay. So yeah, no disappointments. That's pretty good.
Well, I guess I had higher expectations for at least one that I'm thinking of. It's you get a mix of people, 15 people in a class, 20, well, not 20, but yeah, 15 people mm-hmm. in a class, and the discussions are just, sometimes you walk out and think, how did it go that way, you know?
Yeah.
we went off topic or something, and I don't think we needed to talk about that. It just was, you know, so each class is different in that respect.
Yeah, and there's a reason that you ask for the evaluations. I mean, I have to believe you're always looking to improve, right?
Exactly. I would say it's hard to imagine that there's ever been a CVEC class that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so every class has a diversity of students in it, and they will respond in different ways. For some students, the pedagogy is exactly the way they learn. That's precisely the way they would like to approach it. Other students, mm-hmm. Less so. Whenever you have a class where students are expected to participate, as Jack says, the instructor is ceding some control over mm-hmm. what happens in the class to the people who are in the class.
Sure.
And that doesn't always work well. So what I do with it is that we share the results with the instructors. I meet with them, typically anyway, because we're talking about another. Candid feedback mm-hmm. is important and typically welcomed.
Oh yeah.
One of the things that happens is takes a time or two for new instructors to get it. Is that the students in the Elder Collegium are just fundamentally different. They're world-wise. They have vast experience. And the students that they're used to teaching are typically, you know, between 18 and mm-hmm. 22 or 20, 23 mm-hmm. 3 years old. They have a whole different set of things. Depending upon where you taught. When I first started teaching at Carleton in 1971, the students would read everything that mm-hmm. you know they were, but you know the 60s and the transformation that pretty soon the students would do what, of course, it took me a while to learn to do as an adult, that not everything somebody asks you to read is actually worth reading. And one of the most important things you've got to learn how to do is when not to, when to say, this is not worth reading. I'm going to move on to something that I think is worth reading. And so professors that are people who have taught and making the transition to the different audience sometimes takes a course or two. They ask students to read too much, or they ask them to read things that are saying the same thing in different ways, and so there's not so much marginal. Yeah. So all of that is part of the dialogue, and then of course there are people who we don't invite to teach again, but that's rare.
Yeah, I would guess, just keeping in mind the people who are taking the course and why they're taking the courses, I would think workload would actually be a concern from time to time as an instructor, wouldn't it? Or would it?
Well, it depends on the this is a, I can tell this story, I guess, because I am a sociologist. I want to say this carefully, very little that's written in sociology is worth reading carefully.
Okay.
It's almost always worth reading.
Sure.
But the way you read it and what you look for, and when I say by reading carefully, it's not going to be great literature. I mean, there are things that you can read in some courses, and you're reading it, and you're just left breathless at the end of it, how transforming just the experience of reading it was, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are... So instructors have to understand that they're now dealing with people who have other things to do in their life, and if you want them to engage, you have to get where they are.
You have to pick your spots a little bit.
I put a great amount of time not only to my original outline that I had to present to Dan, but also in between classes in preparation for it. You know, I wanted to represent CVEC well, wanted to represent myself well, but when I walked in that classroom, these are accomplished people.
Yeah.
And there was an expectation that you better do a good job for these people. And I felt a little bit of pressure to do that every week, but I pressure in a good way for getting things ready to go. And
I can't imagine you actually putting some work into preparation, Joe. That's, having worked with you for a year and a half on the show, what? You prepare? Are you kidding?
Well, I learned. My mom is a 78-year-old. She's still a high school teacher. Still works with the school plays. I get that level of preparation from her.
Yeah,
you know, she's one of those foundational teachers at a high school. And
so, one of the classes I taught, I have two former Carleton colleagues in the class, and. These days, you know, people bring laptops to class, and all the classes have Wi-Fi. So they were fact-checking me. So I'm up there, we're talking about it, and all of a sudden I see them going like this, and all of a sudden they found some article over here. But that was challenging. This was all, they were terrific about it. I mean, this was all very constructive stuff. But that doesn't happen to...
Yeah. Yeah. Your average Carleton junior probably isn't going to do that to one of their professors. So,
so Dan, we know CVEC is located in Northfield. Where are the courses taught? Did we talk about where the actual physical locations are?
I've yet to say NCRC, so no.
They're typically, most of the classes in person are in Village on the Cannon. There'll be five or six of them there. This winter term, five of the classes are on Zoom, 10 of them are in person. Five of those are in Village on the Cannon. Two are in Kildall Community Room. Two are in the Northfield Community College classroom, which is a great, great classroom. We've been fortunate to have. I guess not five, but six of the courses are in Village on the Cannon. We have taught courses in Faribault as well. The County Historical Society space is a good place to teach. We keep trying to reach out a little bit out of Northfield itself. I would love to discover a larger market in Faribault, and we would conceivably teach courses there.
Excellent.
Well, not everybody can just jump online and register there. Is there a physical office address?
There is, and I should have brought the. We've changed the post office. You can still pick things. You can still send things to the CVEC address at 1651 Jefferson Parkway in Northfield, and that telephone number works for CVEC.
So you can register with a phone call.
You can register for a phone call, but you can. Everybody is a huge mailing list, and people get a physical copy. They can just print and submit by mail. They can hand deliver it to 50 North if they want. They can send it. We have a separate mailing address in Faribault as well, a post office box in Faribault. But the best place to see all of these options is on the website. Although, again, not everybody's on the website, but we're communicating with 700-800 people via hard copy and also email.
So that's CVEC.org, the website?
CVEC.org.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it.
All right. This show, we always like to give our guests the last word on what we're talking about. Is there anything we didn't talk about, anything we missed about the CVEC you think people should know?
Well, I would say try to register early for the classes because they fill up, is the best ones anyway, as Dan was saying, or the ones that you're interested in might fill up really,
right.
really quickly. I think we're getting to the end of the registration period for this
we are
and term,
yep.
But you can get on the email list, I would say,
yep.
pretty easily, and so they'll let you know immediately when the classes are available. And then, yeah, it's important to not dilly-dally around and for a couple of weeks. Just, you know, try to register. If you're interested in that class, try to register early for it. Yeah.
And I don't think we defined, you know, there's a fall, a winter, and a spring term. Is that correct? What typically, what are the dates and all that? And when do course registration open? When does that open?
Registration for winter is open now,
and
it's it closes on the 11th. But courses that are what closes on the 11th of December is classes that are oversubscribed, mm-hmm. and then they'll do a random selection for who gets in. So, in a way, I mean, Jack is partly right that you should try to register early, but if a class is oversubscribed, registering early won't have improved your chances to get in because
if I assume three or four different aliases, can I enter more than once?
You could.
Okay.
You could, then the winter term courses start on January 9th, and they'll go for 8 weeks, and then the spring term starts the last week in March and goes through the middle of May.
When does the spring term registration open?
It will start around the 1st of March.
Okay. All right. I got it.
And so,
Dan, anything that you think we should touch on?
And this is just on a slightly different topic. I would just say, you know, things like KYMN radio and local news, local stuff is really important for communities, and I think I just want to say that what you guys do down here and what happens elsewhere is critically important for American democracy, for all of the rest of it, and just keep it up.
Thank you, sir. Those are kind words. I appreciate that.
Should we wrap it up?
I suppose.
All right. So another great and interesting conversation. We're going to end it here. Dan Sullivan, Jack Seeloff, thank you for being a part of Public Policy This Week here on KYMN.
I'm Rich Larson. My co-host today has been Joe Moravchik. And gentlemen, yeah, I want to just thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedules and, you know, maybe taking away from your tennis games. I hope we didn't do too much there. But sharing your knowledge and experience with our listeners. Like you say, Dan, these shows are important, and it's the wisdom that you guys bring to these shows that makes it so important. So we really do appreciate you, your time.
The objective for Public Policy This Week is to inspire important, meaningful, in-depth conversations about public policy challenges and opportunities. We're on KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1 each Friday morning from 10 to 11. And if you don't catch the program live, you can pull up the podcast of each program here on KYMN or on any of your favorite podcast services. Just look for our Public Policy This Week Capital logo.
And speaking of pulling up archive programs, Dr. Sullivan, along with Steve Poskanzer, two presidents emeritus, Steve from Carleton College, and of course, Dr. Sullivan from St. Lawrence, joined Joe and myself in April this past year to discuss the state of higher education and affording a college education. And that was a fascinating discussion, by the way. There were some things that came out of that conversation that I had not considered at all. And that can be found on KYMN Radio. That's just one example of a lot of really good conversations. Joe's CVEC course, coming this spring, backed by popular demand, is titled History and Current State of U.S. Policing. The course, as titled, will examine the history and current state of policing in America, but also the laws, amendments, and court cases that guide policing, the authority and role of the police, police operations and philosophies, police discretion, police terminology such as, what? Reasonable, articulable suspicion, totality of circumstances and probable cause, searches, surveillance, and technology, police and the media, major crimes and contemporary cases, and the importance of the role of policing and community trust in policing. The goal is to broaden understanding and provide needed context for the serious and important public policy discussions regarding policing that are underway at the local, state, and federal levels of government. So be sure to come back, join us for next Friday's edition of Public Policy This Week. Everybody have an outstanding Friday and a superb weekend. Take care, everyone.
You've been listening to Public Policy This Week. Tune in every Friday morning at 10 a.m. for more conversation with policy experts. Remember, this show can be found on your favorite podcast platform or stream it from kymnradio.net.